Let's talk tech. Hi everyone, welcome back to Let's Talk Tech. I am really excited about today's episode. Well, we are really excited about today's episode because it's going to be a bit different. But welcome back to our tech breakdown season. And yeah, so far we've broken down AI, data analytics, cloud, big data and IoT, blockchain, human computer interfaces. And for this episode, we're actually going to be doing something a little bit different. It's still a breakdown episode, but with a slightly different flavor than what you've become accustomed to. Tolu, do you wanna give them a little bit of a lowdown to what we're doing today?
So Timmy is laughing because she knows that this is not what we planned, but okay.
I'm playing. Hey, I love to do that to her every episode because she's just like, what are you doing? Anyway, so today, these are the only two voices you're going to hear. It's just Tolu and I, your loyal, faithful hosts. And we are going to be giving you a double header, actually. We're going to break down ARVR, that's augmented reality and virtual reality, as well as quantum computing.
Yes, and you heard her right.
ARVR and quantum computing. And we're going to give you an update on to what's next, because this is the season finale, guys. Yeah. This is the end of the Tech Breakdown series. I hear you all weeping and crying. Don't worry, we're coming back. Season two, we've got something else in store for you. But yeah, that's what we're doing today. We're breaking down ARVR and quantum computing. And yeah, you might think, you just said you're the only two voices, and I'm sure you know by now, we are not ARVR or quantum computing experts. But what we've done, guys, is we've done what we're always telling you to do. We've gone to research about ARVR and quantum computing, and we are going to come and give you what we found out in the typical format, and we were unable to find any guests.
Yeah, let's just put it simply.
We didn't find any guests. It's difficult, man. And I know why,
especially quantum computing.
I know why now. Now I did some research into quantum computing. I understand why we weren't able to find anyone. But yeah, Tolu will be giving you a breakdown of ARVR. I'll be giving you a breakdown of quantum computing. And please, I'm really intrigued to hear what you guys think about this versus when we brought experts on. We're going to try our best. Why have we decided to go ahead despite the fact that we have no guests? Because we really think AR and VR and quantum computing are really interesting technological concepts, themes, topics, whatever term you want to use. And we think they're going to be really important in the next decade or so. So they're a bit more on the edge than the other ones that we've spoken about, particularly quantum computing. But yeah, we think it's really interesting. We've done the research and we're here to break it down for you.
Yes.
How did you find the process before we get into it, Tolu? We were talking about this earlier. How did you find, knowing that you were going to come and do what our guests usually do, how did you find the process of researching and everything?
I mean, it is interesting, you know, and I think now I appreciate even more, like, all of our guests that, you know, that have come on the show. So shout out to, let me try to remember everyone's names.
Go on, take it from the top.
Shout out to Josh, shout out to Sam, shout out to Abby, shout out to our blockchain expert.
Gozier. You forgot about Emeka, big data and IoT.
Oh no, I was coming there. Shout out to Emeka and shout out to Oyi Williams. Yeah.
Well done. You did terribly. But well done.
You know, so much information overloads. That's why. Anyway, so you know, just going through this process actually made me just appreciate all of the work. You know, all of the breakdown that they've done throughout the season. It's not easy, really, especially when you have to use like everyday terminologies to break down things to people who we assume, to our audience, of which we assume some of them don't have, you know, that background into some of those concepts at all.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that's one thing I would say. Other than that, I think it was really interesting to learn about some of the things that some of the use cases for like AR, VR, which we'll discuss in this episode. But yeah, I think that's what I would say in a nutshell. It's not easy, guys, to break things down.
It's not easy,
no.
And I feel like because we don't actively, we're not educated in those areas. By that I mean, like, exactly. We didn't study it,
yeah,
and we don't work in it, so we don't mm-hmm. apply it. So we had to learn it and then apply it and then simplify it.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
I had a much lot of fun, easier to be honest. I can't mm-hmm. lie. I really, I'm weird like that. I love researching stuff. I love learning more about stuff. So I enjoyed it. But I was saying to Tully, I was listening to a lecture on quantum computing. The amount of times I had to rewind that film was ridiculous. Like, my brain was just like, wait, hold up. What are you saying? I think we both enjoyed it. And yeah, hopefully we do it justice.
Yeah, exactly. So y'all will be the ones to rate us to see. Thumbs up or down. Yeah,
please let us know. Because usually we know our guests have done an amazing job, and now we're hoping we do a good job. But let us know what you think. And if you like it and you want us to do other ones outside of season one, let us know. Or if you want us to go research something, let us know. Yeah. Okay, so that's why we're here today. We're breaking down AR, VR and quantum computing. So let's get into it.
Let's do it. All right. We are starting with the main quantum computing. Do you know what, guys? First of all, if you're really excited to hear this, you need to just send Timmy a message, or you know, us, or Ro has some dollars, some pounds, as they've been doing for Davido this week. You know, just to appreciate her, because this quantum computing matter, Timmy has been on it. She's like, we need to do this. We need to talk about this.
In
my mind, I'm like,
I've been fighting for this breakdown.
Yeah, she has. And I have to give it to her. I'm just like, okay, you know what? Let's do it. You know, and Timmy is going to be the reason that you understand quantum computing today. And you can probably talk about it in a board meeting.
Pressure. And people pressure.
No doubt. I'm getting people excited. I'm pumped up to listen. And yeah, because at some point I was just like, Timmy, do we need to do this? But yeah, we're here now. So, Timmy, quantum computing, break it down for us. What is it? Okay. Why do we need to know about it? Why is it important today?
Okay, so quantum computing, in the most simplest terms, is the use of quantum mechanics to solve problems. Which is not that simple.
Timmy, you're going to break down every single word in that sentence.
Now, basically, quantum means very, very, very small.
That's a good start.
Yeah, so I think most of us would have done biology, chemistry, and physics. So when we looked at, for example, a cell,
Basic science.
Basic science. We look at a cell. A cell is small, but like, it's measurable, right? It's a few, I think, millimeters. Don't quote me on that. Maybe micrometers. And then if you look into a cell, you've got a nucleus, which has protons, neutrons, nucleus. So that's, again, smaller. Quantum is even smaller than that. So quantum, we're talking orders of magnitude smaller than a cell. So we're talking about atom level. So right down to a carbon atom or an oxygen atom or hydrogen atom, which are many orders of magnitude smaller than a cell. So like even smaller than nanometers. So really, really small. Like, my brain can't really comprehend how small. I just think like a dot mm-hmm. and then I go smaller than that. Exactly. But basically that's what it means. And why that's important is when you get that small in order of magnitude, weird things start to happen on a physical level, physics. So you have different properties at that level of magnitude. And a lot of that behavior has been studied over time and comes under an umbrella of quantum mechanics. So looking at how do things move, what properties do we see when we move to scales that minute. So what we have is quantum mechanics. So that is the movement, the properties that we can see on particles, molecules, whatever, at that really small scale. And we're using that and that kind of, if we think about it in that context, to solve problems. And I will explain later how that actually works, but that's what it means. We're using the properties of things when they're really, really small, and their movement and how they behave and interact with other things to solve real life problems. Mm-hmm. And a note here is, a lot of this is still very much in the research space, hence why we weren't able to find anyone. But there have been a lot of breakthroughs and there's a lot of promising things in the future. So, really small things means unique, different things start to happen. Through the course of my research, I found out some really interesting things, actually. So one of the things that I found out that I didn't really know about is that quantum mechanics, quantum physics, quantum computing is based on the randomness and probability that occurs at that really small level. So by that, I mean, typically, and this is like a famous example when you look at quantum computing. When we think about probability, we think about things like flipping a coin, right? When you flip a coin, you either get heads or tails. Mm-hmm. And that's it. Like physically, there is no one disputing that. It's logic.
Only math, two statistics. Outcomes. Yeah.
There are only two outcomes. It's either heads or tails.
Yeah.
And that is standard probability, statistical probability, and it is what drives classical computing. So this is another term. Classical computing is what we're used to. A typical computer today that allows us to do all the things that we do. So word processing, web browsing, and that works on that concept of heads or tails, or something known as bits, which is based on the binary system, which again is yes or no, zero or one. And we build on that concept of zero or one. Things can either be or not be, on or off, to build up like chips, computers, so on and so forth. Classical computers take inputs, they operate on them, and they give you an output.
So simply put, logic. Yep.
Logic, exactly, logic. So quantum computing disrupts all that. So basically, we take this concept of mutually exclusive events. So that means it's either going to happen or it's not. It's either going to be a heads or a tail. And it completely messes that up. And it makes sense in a way. Let me take you on a journey. So when we actually flip a coin, heads or tails, you don't actually get 50-50. It's not going to round out that way. And why is that? It's because when you flip a coin, you do something that disturbs that yes or no. Because you're acting on the coin, it can actually be yes, yes, or no. So a great example is, if you spin a coin, what state is it? Is it heads or tails?
Head or tail.
Exactly. That is quantum computing. It's like when you spin a coin, and then if you think about it really, really small, when you mess with things on a quantum level, you have a state that is somewhere in between heads or tails, yes or no, one or zero. So we no longer deal with ones and zeros, bits. We deal with something called qubits, which is, it can be one, it can be zero, or it can be somewhere in between. So I like the representation of spinning a coin. If we think about spinning a coin, it's a one, it's a zero, and it's somewhere in between. So quantum gives you multiple states, multiple bits beyond our classical logical understanding of zero or one. So that's one way to look at it. The probability, they call it an additivity axiom, but that's way too complicated. It's basically just messing up what we know. It's not necessarily one or zero. There are moments in time where it could actually be a one or a zero or both. If you think about it really small. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Okay. You're doing great.
Oh.
I think we'll leave it to our listeners to judge, but I think you're doing great. Keep going.
That's one aspect, probability. And quantum computing basically enables you to have a spectrum, as opposed to there being a definitive zero or one, you have a spectrum. Mm-hmm. And that's great. And that helps us with simulating. So I just spoke about physics. It helps us simulate physics. and a lot of problems there. It helps us simulate chemical equations, mm-hmm. a lot of scientific applications right off the bat just from that very property. Okay. So what I spoke about where it can be zero, one, and every possibility in between is called superposition. So we typically have, like I said, the classical understanding of you flip a coin, it's either heads or tails. But superposition is when you flip that coin and it's spinning, it can be heads, tails, anything in between, depending on where you capture it. And mm-hmm. the quantum computing is we're delving beyond just like what we can see, really, really small. And at various points, it's zero, one, it's zero and one. It's like a gradient. So that's superposition. And that helps us to build something called quantum logic gates, which can create states that we don't have. So this is where my head started to go a bit, because they started talking about things like square root of zero and stuff like that, which I'm not going to get into. But basically, this superposition property that happens at quantum levels, which is zero, one, anything in between, a combination, allows us to create multiple states. Let's think about...
Can I stop you there? I think that's really interesting. And in the little bit in code that I know about quantum computing, I haven't come across that term.
Superposition.
Superposition. Yeah. And what you were saying about the gradients mm-hmm. and the possibility of capturing the different possible outcomes.
Yeah.
Because someone looking at it, say for example, you spin a coin, someone looking at it from the left can see a head.
Yes, exactly.
Someone looking at it from the right could see a tail.
And then if you've got perspectives, a bird's eye view.
There's a bird's eye height. There's a bird's eye view.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
And then quantum computing allows you to capture all those views basically. Mm. And then that enables you to investigate many different states that we could do with a normal computer.
So
quantum computing superposition, which allows us to build quantum logic gates so we can perform operations at so many different levels, like Tolu has said, different perspectives than we could do with just a zero and a one. So that's a qubit, really important. The next property that I want to talk about is entanglement. Shout out to Jada.
Yeah, so the moment I heard that, I've heard that term before, and I was like, ooh, Jada, okay.
So, again, I want us to think we're on a quantum level. Things are really, really small. When you have a quantum bit, so that is really, really small, it has infinite possibilities, zero, one, anything in between. What happens is because they're that small, when you have several of them in a vacuum, which is where you would have it, and a vacuum is just where there is no other thing. They behave, like I said earlier, strangely. And one of the properties that's been observed over time is that they actually become entangled. So this isn't something we're unfamiliar with. If we think about throwing a bunch of balls into like a jar and you shake it about, at some points they will hit each other, they will rebound, mm-hmm. but they stay separate, right, in our logical world. However, on a quantum level, if you did that, what you actually start to find is they start to become entangled, right?
I'm a student in a class here. So is that because of how small or how fragile they are? Okay.
Yeah. They're really small. Think about it. They are the smallest possible thing they could be, if that makes sense.
Like sand.
Like sand, but smaller than sand. Perfect. Yeah. Because when you mix sand together, how could you then identify individual grains to remove?
Mm.
They become entangled, right? They correlate and they can become a system. And when that happens, they start to impact and it causes even weirder things to happen, right? Mm. The entanglement can't be controlled at that small level. If we think about it, like we've got the energy mass equation. So things are moving, they're coming together. That gives them more energy to continue to move around. You get to a point where you can't actually really control these qubits, which is where another really important aspect of quantum computing comes in. We have to have these computers in really, really temperature controlled environments. So that means really low temperatures. and IBM, Google, and several tech companies and research facilities around the world actually keep these at really, really low temperatures, which is absolute zero. So minus 273 degrees or even lower. And it has to be because, like Tolu said, they're so small, they start to behave really unpredictably. And in order to try and get it to a point where you can control that movement, it needs to be that cold. Because we know that the hotter something is, the more reactions that we get.
Yeah.
So we have it really, really cold. So the supercomputer looks weird. No, it's not a supercomputer. Quantum computer looks weird because you've got a bunch of... It looks like a chandelier, basically. And what you've got in that is the qubits are being housed in a really cold place to try and reduce the number of collisions, entanglement. And then a lot of the time, the way it is controlled is they will send microwave signals. So that's like a really small signal to try and get them to entangle, but in a way that we want them to, if that makes sense. So you send a signal, and let's say you've got one qubit that can take any state from 0 to 1 and another, and you tell that signal to actually, you want it to entangle with that other one to create 2. And then you've also got a
computer. So that's where logic comes in.
That's where logic comes in. You've got the computer, which is the logic aspect, exactly. Mm-hmm. So you've got a computer hooked up to this system, sending signals, and we're doing a lot of modeling and algorithms to figure out what signal do we need to send to get this qubit to behave in the way that we want to help us solve this problem. And that brings us to the final property, interference. So when you've got entanglement, what happens is you get, when they entangle and like collide, whatever, if we think about it, when something collides, let's think about like sound waves. When a sound wave happens, you have an amplitude. So it's either high or low, and positive or negative. This happens with quantum bits. So when they collide, it can either be constructive, so they have a positive amplitude, or destructive, they have a negative amplitude, or both, because again, we're in this quantum world, so it's like, it's a wave.
Mm-hmm.
But this interference allows us to control quantum states. So with that interference of constructive or destructive, we can say we can nudge it towards a zero or nudge it towards a one, and that can help us then start to carry out operations to help solve problems. Does that make sense?
Whoa! A round of applause for Timmy, wherever you are. If you're driving, don't do this. If you're in your living room, come on, hands together for Timmy, come on.
Yes, it did.
Sorry, I got a bit dramatic there because, yeah, I feel like I understand it. Yeah, we'd like to hear what you guys think. But yeah.
That's what I found. Probability is at the heart of it. We're destroying the idea of fixed outcomes, basically, zero or one. And we're looking at the in-between. And when we look at the in-between, it gives us a lot more functionality to approach problems in different ways effectively. Yeah. It just gives us more computational power, more ability.
So that's the next place that I'm going to take you. You're going to take us to, because so we've learned about the cells, you know, as a pictorial description, if you like, of what, you know, the smallest particle is. Mm-hmm. We've learned about qubits, superposition, entanglement, interference.
Mm-hmm.
So now application.
Application. You know,
what
so
are
how can you actually
those
use
real
this?
Life examples that you were yes. talking about?
Yes, exactly. So a real life example is that, for example, Google a few years ago claimed to have achieved something called quantum supremacy, which is very simple. It just means using a quantum computer, they were able to it was literally a mathematical calculation that would have taken 10,000 years, so they claim, on a normal computer, supercomputer even, and they were able to do it in a few seconds using a quantum computer. And why? It ties us back to our definition. Because you have all those various states, it can go through so many possibilities so much quicker than a normal computer.
Mm.
So basically, right now, the applications for quantum computing are, we can develop assembly languages and algorithms. That basically means using the properties that we've described,
mm-hmm.
we can start to use them to solve really difficult problems. And that has great applications for simulations. So if we think about like medical research, pharmaceutical research, even like molecular level research, genetical research, they're often trying to carry out experiments in the here and now and then simulate what will happen. Mm-hmm. With a quantum computer, you can do that very, very quickly. So there are great possibilities there for things like cancer research, research around debilitating conditions such as Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, because you can simulate so many different scenarios so that you have a cell.
The brain.
Yeah, the brain. If I do this, what happens? And it can compute that so quickly that it can really help us move quicker towards new scientific discoveries. So there are huge applications when it comes to science, physics, chemistry, biology. But then also my line of work, cybersecurity. Again, this multiple states thing is great for something like encryption. So right now we have like RSA AES encryption, which are based on like 256 bits and various combinations of that. And it's very secure, but it can and has been broken. With quantum computing, if you think about it, if you have a bit that can assume any state between 0 and 1, and then you have thousands of those, how could anyone ever crack that? Because they would, because of quantum uncertainty, which is another property where we talked about the probability thing. It could be 0, it could be 1, it could be anything in between, times a million. Mm-hmm. How can you break that? Mm-hmm. So there are really great applications potentially for encryption and cryptography. And interestingly, there's a lot that countries are investing into quantum computing because of this, because they want to be the first to discover how to work out the encryption and potentially how to break other countries' encryption now. So yeah, there's all of that. But yeah, imagine if you could completely protect your medical data, your financial data, personal data. It has potentially huge ramifications for us in the personal data and information space. Yeah, I mentioned medical research, drug development, solving molecular problems, financial risk analysis. Okay. So like stock markets, we currently have algorithms, models that can analyze markets, predict stuff. But if you think about, like we said, the various possibilities that a quantum computer can examine, it just gives you even more capabilities.
Yeah.
Machine learning, artificial intelligence. So when we spoke to Josh, he was telling us that like you're trying to teach a computer, and it's he spoke about probability, like there's a chance that this may happen. So with quantum computing, you're improving that probability, because when you work out probability with a quantum computer, it examines possibilities that we can't with a classical computer, or that would take too long. So it should improve machine learning algorithms, artificial intelligence, and get us closer to fully autonomous artificial intelligence systems.
Yeah, that's it for me, I think. Yeah, that's the part I'm excited about.
And then there was one that blew my mind. There was one around teleportation of information without physical travel.
Whoa!
So this was from a TEDx talk. I'll put all the links on my resources. But there was a TEDx talk given by a quantum physicist at IBM, and they're looking at controlling entanglements to create quantum tunnels. So you would have a qubit, and then it would travel quantumly. And then they're thinking, can we build a network with that? So you would have like a quantum internet, and it would like get rid of physical infrastructure. So you wouldn't need a cable. It's, I don't even know, man. It's crazy. And then that could help with stuff like voting. So securely voting from anywhere in the world. But yeah, those are some applications. Like I said, a lot of it is still theoretical and it's still figuring out stuff. But the very near possibilities are definitely around scientific discoveries, simulations, experimentation, which could really help with the medical field, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, that particularly. And, you know, what you said about Parkinson's. So it sounds like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. So is it a thing of the possibility is there for, you know, quantum computing to be able to solve many problems in the world? So is it a thing of now figuring out that logic
Yeah, it's like, figuring out how do we control it, because it's so volatile, because there's so much uncertainty when you get down to a quantum level.
Mm.
Being able to control it and nudge it towards what you want is the real difficulty. And because you have to operate at such low temperatures, it's expensive. There aren't many in the world. It's the big guys playing with these. But recently, there have been some developments in other ways of making quantum computers that I won't go into because it's just long. But no, there's a lot of investment in this space. And I think we will start to see it being applied in the scientific field, I think, in the next decade. And I think it could really help, even with things like the climate change problem, helping us figure out ways maybe to like improve renewable energy and harvesting energy from that and powering stuff with renewable energy. But yeah, those are the applications for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've already started talking a bit into the next question I was going to ask about what are your concerns or issues around quantum computing. So you've already said that, you know, the issue with, would you say, storing the data and getting it at that temperature,
The issue is with a fundamental property of quantum mechanics, which is interference. Because that interference happens randomly, how can we control it? How can we control? Because if there's too much interference, then you have decoherence, which is where things don't make sense. You just have random things happening. It doesn't follow the algorithm that you wanted, and it's useless. So how can we control the interference that's occurring on a qubit level, so that we can then utilize that computational power, the ability to solve problems in a useful way? And then also fault tolerances. So because of the way they're built, quantum computers, any little thing, like what we described again, quantum level, any sort of interference with the machine is wasted. Not the machine, but like the experiment you're doing is done. So the fault tolerance is very low. There isn't much margin for error. So just, again, trying to find ways, how can we better control this? What can we do? Da, 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 da. Very cold temperature, absolute zero. How much energy are we using to try and further this quantum? Because it takes a lot of energy to cool stuff down.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I guess another concern is it never actually becomes anything practical.
I mean, that's it for now, isn't it? So, I mean, we've already said that it's largely theoretical at the moment. So it's, I mean, I think that should, this, I hope this becomes a prompter for someone to, you know, possibly get into
space. To go become
space.
A quantum physicist.
Yes, it's possible. You never know.
They're looking for people. IBM, Google, there's like a research institute. There are various research institutes. There's a lot of money being pumped into it in terms of getting people to work on it. But yeah, that's it, guys. That's your breakdown of quantum computing.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, we'd like to get your feedback. Would the average listener have understood what quantum computing means?
I hope so. Guys, I listened to an hour and a half long lecture. I mean, I've already done some research in the past about quantum computing, but I feel like this actually really helped me understand it more and more simply. I hope it did for you too. So yeah, please let me know. I'm really intrigued. And let me know what you think. Do you think this is practical or could be practical? Or do you think it's a pipe dream? I'm intrigued to hear your thoughts.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Let's Talk Tech. We hope you have found this to be useful and that you are inspired to go and learn more about quantum computing. Stay tuned for the next breakdown where I will be looking into AR, VR. See you next time. Bye.